I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello and welcome to Hometown Glory, your Spurs, culture and tennis podcast. I'm Charlie and we've got Rosa and Tom on tonight for an episode where we're not going to dwell too much on the Brighton defeat, but keep level heads as we look forward to the next stage of the top four roller coaster. But we should obviously start with Brighton on Saturday. A quite surreal day, really. I think Billy said on Twitter, there are a few things more beautiful than Tottenham on a match day in the sunshine. And until about 10 to 5 in the afternoon, it really looked like our team had totally ruined that beautiful thing for us. I guess what went wrong is my question. Rosa, thoughts, what went wrong? Why was it so awful with very few redeeming features whatsoever?
Was it because I was there?
I didn't come to you for that reason first, but I'm glad you've addressed the elephant in the room.
Yeah, I just want to get out of the way.
How are you feeling? Can I ask? I'm interested, actually, Rosa, to know your own sort of mini
level of
emotions. Yeah, and are you now starting to get worried? Because, like, when did you, during that match? I mean, I was sat quite near you and we hung out afterwards. You were saying that by, like, was it half time? You were sort of, oh God, this is like, we're not going to win this match and it could possibly be down to me.
Yeah, I definitely felt it. Do you know what? Like, it has been my own personal mini roller coaster for sure, because I was super excited and I got to go with Ollie, and we haven't been to a match together since the opening game at the new stadium, right? Because then I had a baby and then COVID happened. So, like, the things that had to align for that day to happen for us. Like, already I had the fear of Tottenham kind of screwing it up. And yeah, by the time when we got to half time, I thought I'll give it like a few minutes after half time, because I just assumed that we couldn't possibly be as bad after half time as we were prior. And then it just didn't look like there was like a little bit more energy, but not really, right? And then after a while, I just thought, oh my God, this isn't going to happen. Like, we're definitely not going to win. And I thought we might actually lose. And there was that sort of flurry of 5 minutes when Lucas came on, but then he just sort of dropped off. And I thought, we don't have sort of game-changing, match-winning substitutes, really, the Leicester away game aside. And then we lost. And I will say, at halftime, I was like embarrassingly upset. I really wanted to cry, because I felt so gutted for me. Ultimately, I just felt so disappointed and devastated. And also now a bit like, feeling like a jinx, really. And then after that, I decided, actually, do you know what? I this isn't down to me, and I'm not sorry that I went. And do you know who does need to apologise to me and to everybody else is Tottenham Hotspur Football Club for screwing it up again when it was completely unnecessary and they played so poorly in just completely unacceptable fashion. And I would also just then thank Arsenal for saving the day, really, and ensuring that I did get like a glorious afternoon out in the sunshine with Ollie and with you and with Ash and our friend Kath. So ultimately, I don't really feel like a jinx anymore, but I haven't sorted out my ticket for the next home game, so let's just leave it there.
I think it was a shock to the system, I think, that defeat and the performance that went with it. Because, Tom, I guess, like, none of us saw it coming, right? We were, you know, I think perhaps, you know, the history of Tottenham would suggest we should have seen it coming. But based on the performances we've had in the last few weeks, it just felt like, and perhaps as well because it was, you know, it was a lovely sunny day. We were going first. I think we were all, you know, it was a bank holiday weekend. The vibe just felt so glorious going into that match, that then to be served up that sort of putrid level of like nonsense that Spurs put forward was just, yeah, it was really jarring, wasn't it?
Well, I definitely predicted that we'd win, and we were all buzzing on the last podcast, but I can recall that I mentioned that not that long ago we lost those awful games against Wolves and Southampton at home back to back. And Brighton, yeah, unfortunately felt like more of that, really, didn't it? Back to yeah. That team. I can't really find any redeeming features in the game. In the day, I had a lovely avocado and toast brunch with my mate Linton at King's Cross. As the weather was absolutely beautiful. We got a quick beer in the Beehive, then one outside the stadium. Yeah, it felt lovely. Gorgeous bank holiday. And then the football totally ruined it. The first half was just so frustrating. Sat in the south stand. And I know Ash, if he was here, he hates the crowd getting on the players' backs and kind of moaning about recycling the ball or whatever. But sat in the south stand in that first half when Lloris kept playing short passes to Dier and Romero, and then often them having to play the ball back to Lloris in goal because Brighton were already putting so much pressure on us. And we didn't seem to learn. Like, Brighton were really pressing, and Lloris kept playing those short balls, so much so that I think the first time he played one over the top was at the start of the second half, and there was like a loud jeering sort of cheer from the crowd that he'd finally done it. I'm not saying that they were the only ones at fault, but yeah, that first half was terrible. Half time, I thought, okay, well, it's going to be like Villa. They're going to get a bollocking and they'll come out brilliant. They didn't. They came out terribly. And yeah, by sort of 70 minutes, you just thought, well, they're Brighton are going to nick it, aren't they? I also think last podcast we talked about the telepathy between Kulu, Kane and Son. The three of them were absolutely terrible.
Anonymous. It's totally bizarre.
Totally anonymous. Like you said, maybe Lucas had a brief period when he came on, but I think that was Kulusevski's worst game for us. Bentancur's worst game. He wasn't great at all. There was like a moment that epitomised it for me when we Son played that short corner to Kulu in, it was about the 55th minute after half time, and it led, like, it was awful, the corner. It was obviously some training ground move that didn't come off, and then within seconds, Brighton then had a throw on, and we just gave the ball away so often and so cheaply. And yeah, we were so, so bad. Thankfully, the sun kept shining, and yeah, I got to a park in South London with the family, and by that point, I'd heard that Arsenal had lost, so that was great. But imagine how buzzing we'd be right now if we'd won that, and then Arsenal had lost. We'd be, you know, extremely confident at this point about getting fourth.
I'm sort of telling myself that had we won, I think Arsenal probably wouldn't have lost. I think that they buckled under the pressure of knowing that we had slipped up and that they had an opportunity to take full advantage, and that probably sunk them in a, you know, very Arsenal-y way that they seem to be showing at the minute. So that's how I'm consoling myself around that. What I can't fathom is that, and I guess this is still linked to Arsenal and Brighton, is that, you know, Brighton literally played exceptionally well 7 days before, a couple of miles down the road, in a manner, from talking to Arsenal friends, very similar to how they set up against us in terms of, you know, very kind of tactical performance, denying Arsenal space in the areas that they like to work. All the stuff that we saw, I think, on Saturday, they did the week before. And we just seem to be devoid. Like, is it, we seem so stumped by playing a team that wasn't going to give us that space in behind, or wasn't going to just pour forward and give us opportunities to break. And I can't figure out if it was a kind of cockiness on our part that we have, you know, we'd spent the week prior reading all the lovely things that people had been writing about us and on the podcast, writing about the performances and how fourth was nailed on for this Spurs team now, et cetera, et cetera. Or we kind of panicked a bit because we're now favourites for fourth and this was a fixture we were expected to win, and suddenly it all, you know, gets a bit jittery and the knees start buckling, et cetera. Rosa, which one was it? Cockiness or terror?
I'm just shaking my head because, to be honest, that's the eternal question with Tottenham, isn't it? It's just like, are they just complete cowards, or are they dickheads, or are they just both? I honestly, do you know what? There's like two massively, massively frustrating things about that for me, like on top of the fact that like it was an entirely predictable loss, which is like, one, why do Spurs always make it their business to like immediately disprove everything you've just been saying about them? You know, so we've spent the whole of the last week just being like, it's fine, we come out stronger in the second half, and they're like, no, we don't. You know, they can find their way around teams, they're not going to buckle under the pressure. Yes, they do, whatever. It's just, you know, thinking that we had this like great 11 that was fine. Now they don't have to play. They only have to play one game a week. That's fine. So like everything we'd set up for them, they were just like, actually, you're wrong. And we're just the same old Tottenham. And the other thing that's really frustrating to me is that I don't even feel like Brighton were that good. Like, I admit I didn't, you know, I didn't really watch their game against Arsenal, so I don't know. But certainly, at least to begin with, they were sort of, like, they were pressing but not pressing. Do you know what I mean? They were like very high up in a line, but they weren't moving. They weren't being like aggressive, like getting up in our faces. So it was like it wasn't even necessary to be that timid.
Yeah.
But then when they realized we weren't going to do anything, they just had to hold out. They just needed to be organized.
Yeah. Because, they kind of did the bare minimum throughout.
Yeah.
Whilst sort of steadily growing in confidence that they could actually just go and nick it, which obviously they did.
Basuma was very good, wasn't he?
They've got some good players for sure.
Yeah,
I would swap their wing backs for our wing backs in a heartbeat. Yeah. Kukurela and Lamptey.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, we have to mention Lamptey for Billy, of course. Yeah, and their left back.
I think Kukurela's definitely worth picking out. I think he's a really, really good player.
He was
with incredible
great.
Hair.
Like, you know, amazing hair, really great hair. I kept being like, who's the guy with the hair? Like you said, Rosa, I think they totally mugged us off. And also, this time last week, there were all the tweets and kind of articles saying, are Son, Kulu and Kane the best front three in the league? As we record this, Diaz, Salah and Mane have each scored one and each assisted one as Liverpool play.
Yeah, so we've just pissed them off, basically.
So, and they're going to win, they might win four trophies. So I would say maybe Son, Kane and Kulu aren't the best front three in the league just yet. Although, admittedly, Liverpool can rotate.
But like, again, your love letter to Kulu last week, and then on Saturday he was just like, Tom, you're wrong.
Who was that guy? Seriously, it was
terrible.
It was back to his, like, you know, those sub cameos against Southampton Brighton. Wolves, where he just, his first ever performance against Brighton, where he just looked like a competition winner. Just mad levels of ineptitude from him.
Was it as bad as
he should
as
have
the
been
Wolves
sent off
game?
As well?
Yeah, but then they should have had a player sent off, right?
So, I thought it was like the Wolves game, but in reverse, in that Wolves like scored really early and then didn't have to do anything because we were so devoid of energy or creativity. Whereas here, it was like we started off how we finished that game, sort of huffing and puffing a bit, not doing anything. And then Brighton sort of got the sucker punch right at the end. But, you know, it was like, it was mad. And, you know, we were talking, you know, between us lot over the weekend about like, it's difficult to pick out names in terms of who you criticise because they were abject, all of them. I do think, though, that because he's our best player and also because he literally flew to Augusta to watch golf during not a break, like they just happened to, you know, be playing once a week now. But I do not, you know, and obviously had we won, no one would be talking about Kane going to the Masters or whatever. But I really, really hope that it's just like locked down at the Conte gulag now for 7 days a week. Like no more Mr. Nice Guy, no more days off, no more, you know, letting the players like, basically no more trusting footballers to make the right decisions about this stuff because they cannot be trusted. Fourth is too important. No.
They're giant children, even if they have children of their own. Yeah.
he was awful. That was the worst, I think, personally, even in the context of a season where he basically like mentally didn't show up till about October. I think that was worse than anything he's put in all year. He did literally nothing all match, really. I can't think of anything good he did.
The entire team at halftime, I remember saying they looked lethargic, as if if you told me they'd played midweek and we'd flown to Kazakhstan and played a Europa League game on the Thursday, I'd have believed you. Because we looked totally knackered and we've got no excuse. At least when we played those Southampton and Wolves games, our schedule was a lot busier. Whereas now, it's one game a week. They had an entire week to prepare for that Brighton game.
Yeah.
Like you said, Charlie, that we saw what they did at Brighton. Like, you know, Conte's not absolved of, and his team aren't absolved of guilt here either, because they saw what Brighton could do against Arsenal, and they've been on quite a decent run. Everyone knows how Graham Potter sets up his teams as well. So, so frustrating.
Yeah,
inexcusable. And I don't even really understand why Kane didn't, like, at least normally in those games, I feel like he tries to make things happen, but it was nothing.
Yeah.
There was no, it was so static as well. That was absolutely maddening. It was static. And then also just, we lost every single 50-50.
Mm.
Like, I can't.
And I think when you do that, you stop getting lucky with things like second balls. And I noticed in that game that, you know, often when sort of a Dier or a Romero or a Davies does one of their, you know, diagonals or chip balls forward, much like the first goal against Villa the week before, you know, if you put the ball in the right area, you often get a knockdown falls your way, or, you know, a defender tries a headed clearance and it lands to one of your strikers. It seemed like nothing like that was happening. Every time, you know, someone, it like deflected off someone, it would fall to a bright player. And I think, you know, you basically make your own luck in those matches. And I think because we looked so lethargic, because we were losing every 50-50 challenge, it just seemed to end up being Brighton that were coming away with the ball in every instance where it might actually be, you know, you could create a chance from something falling your way. Just pitiful. I'm loath to let the mood of the podcast be too sort of dragged down by that performance. So I feel like because we literally have nothing good to say about any of them, we should keep things moving. Fortunately, of course, as we've... Oh, Rosa, go on.
I just wanted to say that I do feel like Højbjerg wasn't too bad, actually.
I have my own personal hero
and villain, and I think Reguilón was by far the worst. I know that, like, in terms of the bar, Kane has said that he was the worst, but I think Reguilón was, like, absolutely the worst performer out there. And I think Højbjerg was actually pretty decent, and I feel enraged that his like fantastic little dribble and cross just got completely wasted. Like, somebody behind me was like, go on, Zidane. And it just got totally wasted.
The most and didn't Mourinho once jokingly call him Zidane as well? I feel like he did a little pirouette thing in the Europa League game.
That's probably why.
sort of apt to bring up Jose, of course. Today it's the year anniversary of him being sacked today. If you record, which seems
one
mad.
One of the stupidest days in our club's history.
Seems like a lot has happened since then, isn't it?
Yeah.
What was I going to say? The fact that the Højbjerg little pirouette and run for that chance that he sort of pulled the ball across the face and Reguilón wasn't there in time. Like, number one, the one moment of sort of inspiration that anyone showed on the pitch, like you say, Rosa, we couldn't capitalise on. And number two, you know full well that Matt Doherty would have scored from that situation, which just made it really, really annoying, that injury.
Our fallen king.
I am now slightly terrified that, like, we're going to crumble like a pack of cards because we can't play Matt Doherty at left wing back, which seems so completely belonging to another vortex of time and space that I don't even understand those words coming out of my mouth. But
is the sort of thing that could only happen to us, let's be honest.
Fortunately, Arsenal have a lot of injuries as well that seem to have completely sunk them. Those injuries to Partey and Tierney just, yeah, they're in a bad, like, we're hoping, right, that Brighton performance was one of those things that Conte can now use as a rod to beat them with, get them fired back up. It's an anomaly. You know, you do not do that again. You don't go into a match like that for the next six fixtures. And hopefully we'll, you know, there's enough credit left from previous performances that we'll steady that ship. Arsenal now are in a bit of a tailspin, right? That's four defeats from the last five. I read today that they've scored with two of their last 63 shots, which doesn't seem very good. Both their strikers' contracts are up in a couple of weeks, and they're the guys that they're sort of relying on goals for, really. The Partey injury particularly, again, I was reading today and I don't think I realised quite what a good season he was having. Maybe because I just don't always like to read match reports when Arsenal have won, but their win ratio drops from 65.2% to just 25% when Partey doesn't start. The number of goals they scored decreases from 1.83 per 90 minutes to just 0.38. And the number of goals they concede rises from 1.09 to 1.5 per game. So I'm just hoping that Arsenal might kind of continue letting us off the hook. And United are awful. Like, I mean, Liverpool are taking them apart as we speak, which, you know, I feel like Liverpool do that to most teams. But I just have a feeling / hope that we're the least, despite Saturday, the least kind of basket casey of the team still in this sort of ridiculous, you know, who can fail the least for top four. After the weekend, bit of a sort of temperature check. How are you both feeling about it all? Tom, you know, obviously no one's as confident as we were when we were talking last week, I'm sure. But considering the context of what Arsenal are up to at the minute, the fixtures we've got coming up, how are you feeling?
Still can't even talk about it. I just don't. I should have not come on the podcast. I just don't want to jinx it, but I think you're right. I'm enjoying United being a fucking shambles. That's great. Arsenal's injury problems are great news. West Ham drew at the weekend, didn't they? So they're surely out of it now.
They're just going to be so distracted, yeah.
And they've also got an injury crisis of their own.
Yeah, centre-back.
They seem to have no centre-backs for their Europa League semi-final. So fingers crossed their European adventure comes to an end.
This must be causing you quite a lot of, I dare say, sleepless nights, Tom. West Ham, sort of European trophy winners.
We could still have West Ham win the Europa League and Jose Mourinho win the Europa Conference with Roma, having failed to win anything with us, and just go and win a trophy with Roma immediately.
Make your peace with it right now. That's the only way.
Yeah, I can't make peace with the West Ham thing. I read today as well that if they win the Europa, they would go into they'd go into the Champions League next season, but they'd also go into the Champions League as top seeds. So they'd like get I mean, there's no easy, easy group, I'm sure, in the Champions League, but they would like be one of the eight top seeds in the Champions League.
Surely Leipzig.
You know, that's ridiculous, though, because all of those fucking years where Europa didn't get you anything, and then all of a sudden they're like, you can have Champions League and go, like, straight to the top. Like, how dare you? How dare you, UEFA?
Yeah, come on, Eintracht, please. I was going to say they're my German team, and they kind of are, and I've been to see them, and one of my very good friends is a huge fan and has taken me, so they are
The Moody Diva?
The Moody Diva, yeah.
I'm sorry, I don't trust them.
Yeah, they're not to be... Their nickname, mm-hmm. Tom, literally is... It translates to, as Rosa says, I can't even say it out loud without laughing, knowing that we're going to have to trust them to basically... Well, I mean, I guess Leipzig would be favourites against West Ham in a final.
You'd hope so.
Right? I mean, especially they've got like Champions League pedigree. Oh, yeah, especially
if I can't watch Mark Noble out there lifting a trophy. Please, Lord.
He can't win a trophy before... I'm worried to even continue down this for fear of like a West Ham fan thing, like getting audio of this and enjoying it when they do lift it or something. But
yeah, I'm putting a stop to this right now.
Yeah, we need to stop there. I feel like we're talking it into reality as well. But Tom, do you feel like out of 10, how confident do you feel we're going to get top four at this point in time?
Six? Not okay. Yeah, I could, okay. You know, we're good at self-sabotage.
Yeah. Rosa, out of 10?
I'm going to go with 7. I feel, because I think probably we are the kind of least idiotic of the remaining contenders. And I'm annoyed about that because I feel, again, this is something that we were talking about last week. And again, like I sort of merrily said, this is fine. Like we've won, like the other teams have lost and we've won a game. So we're like doing it for ourselves rather than like relying on the teams around us to save us from ourselves. And that is exactly what happened this weekend. So it does feel like it's going to be a bit of a drunken stumble to the finish line. But I think we'll probably be the most sober of the drunks, yeah.
I guess that takes us on to our next, the next sort of pub on this drunken sort of bar crawl to the finish line. Brentford away on the weekend. Going to be pretty tough. Going to be pretty tough, the Christian Eriksen derby, I think. They obviously beat West Ham 2-1 on the weekend. Very like weirdly similar fashion to how we beat Watford with a sort of 95th minute sort of set piece goal, I think it was, or at least a header from a goal from across. They've won 5 out of their last 6. Eriksen's obviously playing incredibly well. And I guess, yeah, it'd be interesting to see if a bit like Brighton, they play it quite kind of tactically and limit that space in those areas that we like, or if perhaps they'll be kind of too roared on by a home crowd sort of having a party, you know, in the sunshine, London derby, teams flying, and therefore they'll just kind of take the handbrake off and really go for us, which might play into our hands. I feel like we said a lot of this last week, hoping Brighton would do that and didn't. So fingers crossed, Brentford are a little more gung-ho. I'm really, really nervous about this one, as you can probably tell. Is anyone able to calm me down? Anyone? Rosa, Tom?
I'll do it, because I think that it is going to be... Yes, Brentford are good, and obviously Eriksen in particular has made a massive difference to them, right? And watching us on Saturday, we really miss a player like him. So all that said, We were so, so, so bad. And I just think if we play properly, it just shouldn't be so relevant what the other team does. If we can just get our best players doing what they're supposed to do, that should be enough. Whether it will be, I don't know. But that should give you a little bit of comfort and a little bit of hope to know that those players are still better, maybe not than Eriksen. Well, yeah, I don't know. But ultimately, altogether, they are better, right? And if they are better coached, usually, and if they do what they're supposed to do and they do it properly, we should be okay, I think. Like, I just, you know, there's no accounting for Tottenham, really, so that may not happen, but...
Ericsson was on my mind watching that Brighton game. I was reminded of that, the fixture against Brighton at the new stadium just after it opened, when we were really sort of pushing for top four, struggling to get too many results, and found ourselves up against a sort of similarly robust Brighton defence and midfield, and we just couldn't get through until Ericsson sort of blasted one in what was it, like the 88th, 89th minute. And I'm sort of reminded that we don't really have anyone that's like, and I don't know if this is a tactic, but like, we don't really ever take on shots from distance and so much. Like, maybe I'm completely wrong there, but it doesn't feel like we've got players who have those kind of pot shots from distance, either in their locker, or perhaps Conte saying, no, that's a, you know, maybe he does actually listen to XG.
That was also in kind of Ericsson's extremely disinterested phase as well, wasn't it? When he was when he clearly wanted to leave. But yeah, we don't have any creative midfielder who takes on shots from distance or who can take a bloody free kick either. So I think we all want Ericsson back at the Lane, even if. I mean, even just off the bench, he'd be so good to bring on it for the last 20, 30 minutes. He's still, you know, he still seems to have legs in him, but he is aging. So even to have him off the bench would be incredible. And yeah, I can't really. It was only 3 weeks ago that Brentford absolutely smashed Chelsea at Stamford Bridge, and they were brilliant that day. I mean, Chelsea were bad, but they were really good. And yeah, I'm going to feel so sad when Ericsson does something amazing.
Yeah, now I'd forgotten about the Chelsea game, and now I'm actually scared. Do you know what? I don't really mind the thing about not taking shots from distance, because I feel like unless you have someone who can really do it, then it's just often a mark of frustration.
Like, you don't want Harry Winks doing it.
Yeah, exactly. So that doesn't,
It would be nice to have someone. I guess the thing, you know, the thing that comforts me with the, like, that Brentford-Chelsea game particularly is Chelsea were obviously the home team that day, were pushing forward, looking for a goal, etc. I think we'll go back to being a lot more sort of countering Tottenham, sort of soaking up pressure, looking to hit them on the break. So I'm hoping that also away from home, you know, we won't, I think it's probably easier for them a bit. I think the pressure tolls on the weekend. And I think there's definitely, you know, I saw on Twitter there was a bit of back and forth between various sort of Spurs Twitter factions around whether or not the atmosphere in the stadium was sort of, you know, too much one way in terms of being a bit too negative, or whether, you know, actually the performance was that dreadful that, you know, what more can you actually do as a fan? You can only really respond to what you observed up.
I'm of the latter opinion, to be honest. I feel like the crowd was largely fine, but there's only so many times. Like, I know that whole thing about, like, it's all right to recycle the ball and it's fine to pass out from the back, but there are only so many times you can watch Hugo to Romero to Dier to Hugo before you just start feeling like you've gone mad.
Yeah, 100%. That's exactly what that first half was to me, right in front of me in the South Stand. Romero, Dier, Hugo. Oh my God, Royale looking fucking clueless.
Although not our worst performer, Emma.
No, I thought second half.
Not actually a disaster.
And I spent the whole... so much of last week's podcast talking about how Royale will be absolutely fine now because he's got Romero and Kulusevski next to him and ahead of him. And I think Romero and Kulusevski easily put in their worst performances in a Spurs shirt. I think Romero was so bad compared to how he's been. It was, again, we're getting back to just being really miserable. I think we'll be all right. Give me some predictions, some score predictions for Brentford. Tom?
2-1. Ericsson to
2 on Spurs.
Yeah, 2 on Spurs and Ericsson to either assist or score their goal.
Okay, Rosa?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, to be honest. I don't feel confident in predicting anything bigger than that, really.
I want to say a 2-2 draw because I feel like I always predict Spurs win. And
but we don't draw, so that just feels true. One of the things that's not going to happen.
Oh God! And I noticed that was a real theme in a lot of the interviews the players gave after Brighton was this sort of line about if you can't win, you take the draw. You like make sure that you draw, you don't lose. And I wonder if we'll start to see slightly more conservative Spurs in certain fixtures going forward, where it's just like, you know, see what is going on around you, just do what you have to do and get out of there. Like no frills, no nothing. And you know, it's obviously a huge week for Arsenal. They've got Chelsea, you know, potentially as you're listening to this podcast, the Chelsea game could have happened already. Hopefully Chelsea do us a favour, but even again saying Chelsea will do Spurs a favour sounds even more ridiculous the more I think about it. But you would hope that Chelsea would have enough at home to at least not let Arsenal win, but we'll see. And then United go to the Emirates on Saturday for the early kickoff. So hopefully good old Ralph puts 11 men behind the ball and plays out some god-awful 0-0 draw, because United don't seem to be actually capable of stringing anything together. Ronaldo might be back, so that could help us out. But
I think United could get something out of that, actually. Like, they're obviously woeful tonight, but Liverpool are, you know, a monster. And I think they'll be more competent against Arsenal, I would imagine.
You'd hope, yeah. And Arsenal aren't Liverpool. Like, watching some of that, I saw some of the first half before we recorded tonight, and Liverpool were just like toying with United like a cat with a sort of one-legged mouse. It was just, quite cruel. It was really cruel. But I think Saturday was an aberration and we'll be all right. I do. I think in the grand, although I've just said we'll draw, I think bigger picture, I think we're still going to get fourth. I think we're going to be all right. Speaking of stressful weeks, Spurs women begin their Chelsea hell week on Sunday, Rosa. They go to we do go to the Hive, but that is our home stadium. Why do I keep saying visiting and we go to? We play Chelsea at the Hive on Sunday. Chelsea seem to be completely unbeatable. So that's just going to be a kind of keep the score respectable operation, I guess, right?
Yeah, I think so. It's been quite a nice week for Spurs women in some ways, because they've got sort of three new contracts sorted, which is nice. So
including the big one, I guess, right? Rianne Skinner.
Yeah. So she's locked down for like another couple, 3 years.
Very short contracts.
Maybe that's the thing in the women's game. I don't really know. Because they all seem to have only been signed to like 2024 or something. So her and Ash Neville and Kit Graham all signed, didn't they? So that was nice, but also it's a bummer because obviously Kit Graham's out for the season, and then also Rhea Percival got injured, like did an ACL and is out like indefinitely, so that's a bit unlucky, really, like really rough for her obviously, and not great timing for Spurs either. So I think it's just going to be like get through that game and try to come out the other side alive with a bit of your dignity still intact, I guess.
Just in time to then on Wednesday go away to Chelsea. Whatever dignity they have intact from Sunday can be completely dismantled.
We'll just take it from one game. Doesn't matter.
We've got Everton, and then we've got the derby at the Emirates, and then I think it's the game at the stadium. That's something to look forward to for Spurs women. That'll be a lovely occasion. I feel like we've been saying this for the last few weeks, but it's nearly sold out now, hasn't it, Rosa?
It is. Well, this is it. I was like, because I sort of said, oh, I'll sort the tickets out, and then had sort of kept remembering at like inconvenient times and then forgetting when it was actually time to do it, and checked today and then saw that it was nearly sold out. So I had to message Ollie in a bit of a flap because I was out with the kids, being like, can you book loads of tickets right now? And he did it, fortunately. So thank you, my love. Because I guess what I had forgotten was they're not going to open up the whole stadium, right?
So just
I was like,
it'll
be fine. There's like a massive stadium. How's it going to sell out? But yeah, they don't do the whole thing, do they? So that's not my fault.
Even,
that's
even
a
that's
lack of ambition for you, Tottenham Hotspur.
That's in itself, though, still really, really good. Because
yeah,
I've been to a few games there where it's definitely not even just the lower sort of ring has been, you know, maybe 50% full, if that. So, you know, definitely a really, really positive step forward.
It does. And you know what it does? It speaks to their good season, I think,
yeah,
for sure.
And also just the general, I think the social media that the women's team have, the Spurs women has really stepped up this season. I think the interaction between the sort of men's accounts and the women's accounts seems to have been consciously upped and improved. And yeah, just, you know, I think we've all gotten to know the players a bit more as well. Like,
yeah, it's just they've made it a lot easier for us, which is what you need, really.
Definitely. Let's move on to culture, but I'm going to do a sort of crossover because I guess, well, there were two standout sort of Coy's culture crossover moments over the Easter weekend. There was the new Kendrick Lamar album being announced, which is very, very exciting. It's a shame Ash isn't on to talk about that, our resident sort of hip-hop expert. And we've got a new famous fan in... well, Spurs women, I guess, primarily have a famous fan in Emma Raducanu, which I was particularly excited about as a sort of Bromley / Orpington raised tennis playing Spurs fan. Basically, my like ideal celebrity fan. I did a bit of digging around because I was like, is she definitely a fan or is she just like, she's...
You better tell me she definitely is because I don't want to hear it if not.
Ow. Well, because she's obviously like, no, wait,
what
wait
did
for
your
it, wait
investigation
for it.
Find out, Charlie? Because Kendrick,
also,
let's just say, Kendrick, I don't know. He wore...
It doesn't matter. He wore a shirt once.
He wore
he's
some
ours.
Merch once. It was Nike. Someone gave it to him. But whatever. We're claiming
Listen,
him.
He allowed himself to be pictured in it. So, you know.
At a very prominent sort of hip-hop summit, I seem to remember, where, yeah, anyway, but... I'm with Tom. I'm fairly certain that Kendrick Lamar does not get up at 4 a.m. to watch Spurs games on the weekend.
I was going to say, if you're not ashamed to be seen in the shirt, that's good enough for me.
It's not even. I mean, I obviously, you know, the Spurs cockerel is something very, very close to me, but it's not even like we've got an especially like cool, like, I guess it is iconic in that it's, you know, it's been around since 1882, but it's not the coolest of the badges, I would say. So if you were just like a person that wasn't attached to it, why would you pick it? Like, why would you pick it? Anyway.
It's better than a gun. It's better than a stupid devil pitchfork trident thing. Whatever. What's the word I'm looking for? I can't think. It's dumb anyway.
No, you described United's badge pretty well there, Rosa. So Emma, so... Yeah, I was like, oh, she's a Nike athlete, so maybe like she's just been given some Nike stuff or whatever, or like, you know. But anyway, so I did. There was a story in the Telegraph about it. They sort of did a sort of mini investigation as to like why Emma Raducanu had sort of come out seemingly as a Spurs fan. So it turns out all of her sort of team around her are massive Spurs fans, including her physio, whose name I think is Chris, who's a big, big, big Spurs fan. It was his birthday on the Monday when she was pictured in the shirt. And I think like as a sort of present to him, she was like wearing the shirt, but she did then also talk about, she really got into football watching the Euros last summer and Harry Kane was her sort of favorite, being the captain and everything. And then she also loves Sonny. So Sonny sort of worth to the club again, just proving completely priceless over and over again. And then she said basically her team have sort of kept on at her to pick a football team and they've steadily worn her down so that she now does have affection for Spurs and that basically they're her team now. So I think she's safely ours.
Yeah,
I think
it's she's okay. It was thrilling. Sort of, what a day that was on social media.
It
I
was,
believe it.
Yeah.
She's such a superstar.
Bizarrely, if it's the same physio, he lives about two streets from me, Raducanu's physio. And when she
Get
won
her
the US
on
Open,
the pod.
It was here. It's a guy, I think. Yeah. And he, when she won the US Open, he was obviously on TV a lot. I think he was allowed in to the US with her. And then the next week or a few days later, I walked past him in the street and almost grabbed him like he was sort of Brad Pitt or something. I was like, oh shit, I know that guy. I know it's Raducanu, his physio. But if I see him in the street again, I'm going to grab him and go, are you Spurs? Is she Spurs?
Will she come on our podcast?
Will she come on our podcast, please?
This is now, yeah, this is basically where we're going. So I'm just looking at the, there's a story on ESPN. So she says, my whole team basically are big Spurs fans and I feel like they're really egging me on. They're desperately trying to get me behind them. I don't necessarily follow football so much, but I feel like now because of them, I'm feeling some sort of connection. That's the loosest affiliation she can politely make, I think. Then she goes on to say, I loved following the Euros last year and watching Harry Kane, who's obviously the England captain, and Son Heung-min. I'm a big fan of him as well. So yeah, I like to dabble. So then Will Herbert, who's her physio, not Chris, Will, he posted on Instagram to joke that his work was done after sharing an image of her wearing her new Lily White kit. Emma has been baptized a Spurs fan, he wrote. Hopefully we both pick up some trophies now. So I think it's okay. I think she's basically Spurs. That's very exciting. And yeah,
listen, if we can claim Zendaya, we can definitely claim Emma.
I think it's just our podcast that's claiming Zendaya as a Spurs fan. But anyway, so let's rattle through some culture picks. I mean, those are the headlines, obviously, but I still want to know what you guys have been reading, watching, listening, observing, etc. Rosa, tell me what you've been up to.
Just a couple of telly bits from me this week. So the other night I started watching Winning Time. Have we talked about that before?
We haven't, but I was going to talk about Winning Time tonight myself. So No.
I've only watched one episode.
It's better when a few of us have watched it, I think. What did you think?
I absolutely loved it. Full disclosure, my basketball knowledge is limited to The Last Dance, Michael Jordan documentary, and Hang Time, if you'll recall that sitcom.
I very much do, yeah. That and Hanging with Mr. Cooper were my sort of gateways into my basketball love growing up.
Exactly. So I don't really know anything about basketball. It's very confusing to me. I don't really understand how they all play each other so many times. That's the biggest mystery. But obviously I know like the major characters who were involved in this, the rise of the sort of LA Lakers dynasty in the 80s. It's very slick. It's everybody looks very cool.
It's very Adam McKay. If you don't like Adam McKay, you'll have a hard time with this show because it is so stylized and slick and fourth wall breaking and all the rest of it, I found.
That works for me, I have to say. I quite enjoyed it. Like some of it was a bit too much at times, but mostly it worked for me. And maybe that is because I don't know very much about basketball. So I enjoyed kind of being spoken to like I was an idiot. And I just think the cast is so good as well. So you've got John C. Reilly and Rob Morgan and Gabby Hoffman, but the guys they've cast as the sort of like Laker kings,
the guy that
really
plays Magic, Quincy Isaiah, who plays Magic, so charismatic. He's incredible.
Seriously, it just like bounces off the screen, right?
Adrian Brody is fantastic as
Oh, he hasn't because I've only watched the first episode. I haven't seen him yet. And the guy who plays Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is amazing as well. And apparently was a basketball player and then quit to become an academic, which is very, very cool. And this is his first ever acting job, which is amazing. And the guy who plays, is it Norm Nixon, is his son.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's very cool. And those three look unbelievably cool. And it also, the woman who plays Kareem's wife is Sarah Ramos. I don't know if you ever watched Parenthood, which I very much enjoyed back in the day. And she was from there. So it's always nice to see her pop up in things. But I'm really enjoying it. It's just nice. It's really slickly done. It's really well acted. It looks great. And it's just fun to find out about something that I don't know very much about.
Can I just say, I also don't know anything about basketball and I haven't yet watched this show, but I do love a celebrity feud. And did you read that basically Adam McKay and Will Ferrell fell out over this show?
Because he didn't cast him.
Yeah.
And yeah, because Will Ferrell's, he cast John C. Reilly instead.
The biggest Lakers fan of all time, right?
Yeah.
And Adam McKay and Will Ferrell have got this production company. It sounds like basically Will somehow found out that his best mate, his other best mate, John C. Reilly, somehow got the part and he didn't.
Stepbrother.
Yeah, his literal stepbrother got the part. And it's, I presume it's, again, Charlie, can you explain? But it's like an iconic, he's an iconic coach, an iconic character, right?
He's the owner. He's Jerry Buss that buys the Lakers.
I did like the feud because, yeah, they're obviously both producers on Succession and all Adam McKay's other films and stuff.
I think it's worth falling out over because John C. Reilly is just so perfect in that role. And like, just, I always really enjoy it when you can see that actors are having a great time.
Yeah.
And I think that John C. Reilly is having the absolute time of his life playing this role. Like, he just looks overjoyed. He's beaming in every scene. He just looks really well. Like, everything just, he's like, the stars have aligned for him in this role. It's just, it's perfect for him. So,
the thing that really made me laugh about it, though, is it's like having the, owner of a sports team be like your kind of sympathetic way into finding out about sports team just feels so like at odds with everything we feel about our sport. Like the camera pans in on Daniel Levy.
I can imagine the sort of Gabby Hoffman character being at Spurs, though. The sort of long-suffering...
Yeah, I'm obsessed with her already, obviously.
Yeah, you must be a big Gabby Hoffman fan, right? She sort of ticks a lot of your boxes.
Yeah, of course she does, yeah.
Yeah. It's great car, as we've just rattled through. It's really, really good people in it. And you will love Adrien Brody turning up because his sort of metamorphosis through the episodes is really incredible to watch. Any other things, Rosa?
Yeah, so I watched the first episode of Slow Horses on Apple TV, which is the sort of the MI5 spy thing with Gary Oldman and Kristen Scott Thomas, which I really enjoyed. So it's about this guy who gets sort of demoted basically down to like whatever weird MI5 backwater that they send kind of all their failed spies to, and Gary Oldman is in charge. And it's based on a series of books, I believe, but it's also written by someone who used to write for Veep, which is fun, and executive produced by Graham Yost, who did Justified, which I loved. So that was all kind of fun coming together for me. I enjoyed it. It also has someone in it that I went to school with, so that was a really nice surprise.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, Dustin Demery Burns, who plays one of the sort of losers, I guess, who are sort of stuck at Slough House, the slow horse. It's very cool. I liked it a lot. I love Gary Oldman, even though he's slightly problematic. He's obviously an unbelievably good actor, and it's nice. Again, he's having one of those performances, I think, where he's just having a great time in that role, similar to John C. Reilly.
I need to dive into that because the amount of people telling me that it is actually really good is growing by the week. Have you started watching that yet, Tom?
No, I am definitely up for that one. And there is a growing list of Apple TV shows that I need to watch and potentially just need to cancel Netflix as well because I don't really watch anything on there. And it feels like some of the other streamers have overtaken it. I also need to start Hacks, which I know some of you guys have been watching, which is on Amazon Prime in the UK.
Yeah, Billy's obsessed. Rosa, have you turned a corner with it? Because I know you weren't.
Yeah,
thrilled.
No, I'm loving it. I'm really loving it. I'm only, I didn't get as far with it as Billy, but I'm like five episodes in. And yeah, it's definitely, it just is improving with every episode. So I'm fully in for sure.
Cool. That's next on our list, I think, actually. Cool. Thanks, Rosa. Tom, what have you got?
Talking of Apple TV, I really, really enjoyed Severance. I just finished it at the weekend. Charlie's laughing because I don't think Rosa loved it, but I know, I thought it was good. I think, as Rosa would say, it was quite slow for the first couple of episodes, but it really sped up and it was just, I'm not even that into kind of sci-fi and kind of mystery fantasy stuff, but the concept of it, where essentially your brain's split in two and you can be one person at work and one person in your home life, and neither part of your brain knows what's going on with the other half, if that makes sense. So it's quite kind of high concept, but it's directed, most of it is directed by Ben Stiller, and the cast are just incredible. Adam Scott from Parks and Recreation is amazing. Christopher Walken is wicked in it. John Turturro, Patricia Arquette, who I know she's a very famous person, but I don't really know what I've seen her in. I've seen her in things, but she's great.
True Romance, iconic.
Oh yeah, in True Romance, of course.
I can't remember anything I'd seen her in
recently.
She was in Boyhood quite recently, and she was fantastic in that.
I feel like I started Boyhood and I couldn't get on with it.
Oh my God, she is so good in that. And okay. Ethan Hawke is also brilliant in that as well.
She's quite terrifying in Severance. and the whole kind of thing is very spooky and kind of, it's very Kubrick, I thought. I really loved it. It's kind of my favourite TV thing in a while. Apart from obviously, well, Derry Girls has restarted. So I've only watched one, but I'll talk about that on another episode. And Britt Lauer, who's in Severance, is kind of the breakout star. She plays Helly and she's like really, really good. And again, I'm not sure what I've seen her in. She's much younger than Patricia Arquette. So potentially I've seen her in nothing. But yeah, I liked Severance a lot. And the finale episode was really good. Ben Stiller said he was inspired in that episode by 24. So while a lot of some of the other episodes are a bit slow and ponderous, the finale is really amazing and moves at a brisk pace.
When you told me it was only 40 minutes, I was just like, I feel so attacked, because I feel like every episode I watched was like at least an hour and moved so slowly and like nothing happened. And now you're telling me like, stick it out to the finale when everything happens in 40 minutes. No, yeah, I feel attacked.
The first few were like an hour and 10. And I honestly skipped through the menu to go, okay, yeah, most of them are 45 minutes. They're just kind of fooling us with the first couple.
So you're telling me it's my own fault, basically. I didn't do my research.
You should have stuck with it. You should have, yeah.
I think I will just watch the finale, to be honest. I feel like if most of the things happen then, that's fine.
It's worth it. The finale is very exciting and done very well. And it's like a real kind of action thriller compared to some of the rest of the series. There's a really, yeah, there's some beautiful stuff between John Turturro and Christopher Walken's
character. Yeah, that was, if there'd been more of that, I think I would have stuck with it a bit more. I was explaining the premise to someone the other night, and they were like, oh, that sounds good. So you would just go to work, but you would never know about it. And I was like, no, but there'd be a part of you that would only ever be at work.
Yeah.
So you stop work and then you're back like a second later. So I think the sort of inherent like torture of that concept is like not obvious straight away.
Yeah, you're right. The kind of terror of that concept becomes clear as the series goes on, I think. And I read a good interview with Ben Stiller in Rolling Stone, which is full of spoilers. You can only read it after finishing it. But he sort of explained that essentially they're like adolescents, the versions of themselves in the workplace, because they don't really know anything and they're growing. It's a whole new life. Anyway, it was interesting, really interesting concept. And I think it's already got a second series. So it'll be like 2024 or something, annoyingly.
Incredible reviews really across the board, that show. Seems like Rosa is the only dissenting voice, but maybe you can still turn it around, Rosa.
Yeah, I'm not ashamed, you know. I'm an iconoclast.
Tom, anything else, anything you've heard this week?
No, I don't think so.
The Jamie XX single, I was going to talk about that and I thought you might. That's wicked.
No, the Jamie XX single is wicked. It's maybe like the most kind of upfront and kind of pumping thing he's done in ages, really.
Let's Do It Again, it's called, and it's superb. It's really,
yeah,
really good.
It's got a wicked kind of soul sample. That, and then, yeah, I'm really happy Derry Girls is back. The first episode of that, of series 3, was wicked. Series 3 or is it 4? Well, it's the final series.
3, I think, yeah, final. Speaking of third and final series, Tom, I know you don't watch The Split, but Rosa and I are split heads, and We've got two to go, so I don't want to, maybe we should revisit this when we've both watched all of it, but it's just, I love it so much. I'm already like preparing myself for the grief I will feel when it's over and I'm not around the sisters Defoe any longer, even though I
they're
can't
so messy,
stand
two
of
they're
them.
So great.
I mean, I love Nicola Walker's character, obviously, but the other two are two of the most irritating characters that have ever been written for television.
Rose is slightly improved this season for obvious reasons.
It took something quite seismic happening to her for that to happen. Yeah, it's just so ridiculous that this series particularly is so over the top and at times completely nonsensical in terms of people's reactions to what was going on. But, oh, it's just so slick and fantastic and silly and soapy and weirdly
well acted.
It's so gripping
and compelling. You're right, there's like, it's that classic thing of it's well written at times and then at other times the characters are just obvious mouthpieces because of the writer's got something they want to say.
Yeah, there's no like consistency to that show at all. It goes from being like, you can be in floods of tears one second because something is written so like poignantly and perfectly, and then the next you're like, no one in human history has ever said that out loud. That is what people who write things think that people, like, they can't figure out how you would actually say it. Anyway, it's so satisfying, and I feel like Rosa and I are banging on about this every week now, but I really, really would, if you're in the mood for something that is like sort of crap good, like, and is just not going to test you too much but isn't like ridiculously bad or ridiculously like throwaway, this is such a good show to just like allow to wash over you.
Mm-hmm. And only six episodes per season, so
yeah, exactly.
What have you got to lose?
I also watched the Gaza documentary that the Bee put out, which is, we're going to go into that in a bit more detail on a Hometown Glory special very soon, but I really, really, really would recommend giving it a watch. Both episodes are like, obviously we've watched tons of stuff about Gaza before and he's such a documented figure in sport and celebrity and everything else, but I feel like this captures such a dark sort of obviously side to him, but also just really digs into the culture of how he was reported and that sort of peak kind of Gaza hunting that happened in that sort of early 90s, mid 90s period where, you know, felt like papers had whole desks just sort of on him at all times. And, you know, he was so easily led and was such a naive character in so many ways that he was primed for this sort of treatment. And, you know, he's obviously, he's not painted as an angel or some sort of, you know, entirely sort of pure guy who was just wronged by bad people. That's not how it's pitched at all. But it's just a really, really fascinating portrait of an incredibly, you know, important person in sort of, I guess, relatively modern Spurs history and British football history. So, and it's two parts, both an hour long. It's not too, you know, it's not too much to commit to. It's just really, really interesting.
It's interesting because I've got quite sort of mixed feelings about watching it and about Gaza in general, obviously, because he was such a, you know, an icon of our club, but also obviously with his history of domestic violence, I find it really difficult the sort of worship that he still gets at Spurs. So I was a bit like, oh, I don't know if I want to watch this. But at the same time, like, you know, I loved the Maradona film. And obviously he is a pretty, was a kind of problematic, troubled figure himself. So yeah, I don't know. Like, if you say it's worth it, then I'll give it a go. I just, do you know what I mean? I have that sort of,
yeah, it's definitely worth it because, you know, I think I'm going to be 39 years old. So he is, you know, one of the reasons I'm a Spurs fan from, you know, that sort of 91 cup final team, obviously Italia 90, like those are big gateway like Spurs / football moments for me. So he's always been at the kind of forefront of my mind, I suppose, when I think about people that got me into football. So, yeah, I think this is a really nuanced sort of way of tackling the Gaza problem, which is a, you know, which is a problem, I think, for those of us who love Spurs, who love football, who got into football partly because of, you know, him and people like him. So I would definitely recommend watching it. I really, really would. I think they've done it in a very balanced way. And, you know, as someone who's worked in journalism, I think it's really interesting as well. So yeah, I think it's definitely worth a watch.
I need to watch it. I think he was really, it was interesting to see him on Gone Fishing with Paul Whitehouse and Bob Mortimer at Christmas. And I think it was sad, but I guess part of it was like, wow, it's amazing he's still alive, to be honest, given everything. And I'm kind of a bit useless on like Spurs history as well. Like I think live in the moment and the kind of present team. So I'm interested to look back, and I kind of, because my dad wasn't a nut, he was a Spurs fan, but he wasn't like, when I was little, I don't remember watching tons of Spurs and or paying too much attention to us in the early 90s anyway. So I'm interested to watch it, but yeah, it's sad, like sad story. And yeah, like such mixed emotions seeing him, obviously. And I guess, yeah, I'm interested to see how nuanced it is, like how much it paints it as his own fault or personal responsibility versus the kind of pressures he was under, I guess.
I think because there's not loads of sort of like, you know, sit down interviews with him now. You don't get that sort of like, there's not the opportunity for him to kind of have the story presented how he wants it to be presented, if you know what I mean. It's more, you know, it's stuff from the time, it's talking to people who, you know, in some ways have kind of, there's a few journalists that have been sort of done for phone hacking and stuff that are basically at a point in their lives where they're just like, yeah, this is what happened. Like, it was really, really bad. I feel quite morally, you know, troubled by how it all was back then, but this is how it was. I'm just now at a point where I'm quite happy to talk about it, and you know, I have to live with everything that happened back then. So you get all these sort of interesting, quite candid sort of testimonies from people who have sort of, I guess, come clean with their own role in that sort of era of reporting and all the rest of it, which, you know, I mean, Tom and I both came through certain certain paths with journalism, which, you know, makes that incredibly interesting to watch, I think. So yeah, definitely worth the watch, and we'll go into that a bit more when everyone's watched it, I think, as well, because I'd love you guys to give it a watch. Right, I reckon that's us about done. We, I think, kept the mood fairly light considering the weekend. So thanks, Tom. Thanks, Rosa, for helping us along with that this evening. Fingers crossed.
Thank you, Arsenal. And final shout out.
Thank you, Arsenal.
They literally saved our weekend.
They saved our weekend. Let's hope, you know, when you're listening to this, they haven't salvaged their midweek by beating Chelsea, but we shall... we'll see about that, and hopefully Spurs will beat Brentford and it won't matter. Lovely stuff. Thank you both ever so much. That was a joy as always. Thank you for listening. Rosa, you can see us out tonight as Billy's not here.
Up the Spurs.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.